Okay. It's okay. I don't think I'm going to preach, but I do want to share some thoughts that I believe the Lord has given me to share. And I have to say, I do this with some trepidation, but God is good. Okay, first of all, I want to read two verses from the book of Isaiah, chapter 54. This is actually connected with what I want to say, but it's really to follow on from what Jackie said last week in her prophetic word, which I hope you've all got. And can you hear me? Good. Okay. This is one of my favorite chapters, Isaiah 54. Just going to read verse 2 and 3. And it says, enlarge the place of your tent. Okay, the tent was where people lived. That was their dwelling place or the meeting place. They met in a tent. Let them stretch out the curtains of your dwellings. Do not spare. Lengthen your cords and strengthen your stakes. For you shall expand to the right and to the left, and your descendants will inherit the nations and make the desolate cities inhabited. And that is a prophetic word, which we as a church had many years ago, and it's been repeated at times when God was challenging us to move on. And I just believe, Jackie, that it was very significant that you used those expressions in your word last week to us to enlarge the place, and we will see God doing things on our behalf. And I really believe that is for the year ahead. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you a few things. I'm going to start with last year, which was an interesting year. And as Tony mentioned, we were away for just about 2 months, and then we were lying low for a month, recovering. Had terrible jet lag. But this time last year, one of my New Year's resolutions in January 2020 was to start keeping a journal again. I used to write in notebooks things that God has spoken to me or just things that came to my attention. And I was very good at it, did that for years. I've still got them all in a big pile of my junk upstairs. But then I was writing on scruffy bits of paper and, you know, scribbled notes. And of course you lose those, don't you? So when we knew we were going to be away for 2 months, I thought I'm going to buy myself a lovely notebook. I'm going to write down what we do each day and keep a record of everything that happened, including things that God might show us and speak to us, because that's really what a sabbatical is for. So that was fine. Easy to do when you're on holiday, have time. And I took my notebook, it went with me to New Zealand, and I started writing my notes. I did a really good job for the first 3 weeks, and then I lost my notebook. Well, I think I left it under the bed in a hotel when we were in South Island. And I was so cross with myself because we'd been really careful to pick everything up before we left the hotel. Could not find this notebook. So I just went back to writing scribbled notes on bits of scruffy paper, which of course I lost. And I didn't really start writing a journal properly again until lockdown. We just got back in time, as Tony explained. We had time to fill up the freezer, and then we were in serious lockdown at the end of March. Well, actually, lockdown didn't bother me. We'd been away and we'd had a lovely time. I was quite happy to be at home, and we had things to do, and the weather was good, if you remember that. We had good weather, yeah. But what did bother me was I don't have a role. I'm here watching Zoom every Sunday morning. None of us liked Zoom very much at that time. We've got used to it, I think. But that really got to me. I don't know what my position is anymore. What am I supposed to be doing? You know, it was quite a tricky time, quite a difficult time. And I didn't understand where the church was going, and that, you know, after 25 years, it just felt like being in a vacuum and not very comfortable. So I said, Lord, what is going on? I imagine that a lot of you said that to God this year. What is happening, Lord? What are you doing? And you may have had this experience. You may not. You may know what I'm talking about. God said, go back to Bethel. And Bethel was the place that Jacob went back to. And God spoke to him and gave him direction for his life. And important matters were resolved. Okay, and so I knew what it meant. And then I started to think, what does God mean to me personally when he says to me, go back to Bethel? And I actually knew what it meant, because there have been times in my life when I had very difficult decisions to make, or in awkward situations, or in very unhappy situations. And God has spoken to me very directly through the book of Deuteronomy. So I knew that God wanted me to read that book again. I've read it many times, and to meditate upon it. I think Precious spoke, about meditating on the word of God about this period, and it really struck home, struck a chord with me. So I got myself another book to write in, and I started doing a journal again. And that was back in May I started that. I know that because I've written the dates in it, so that's quite helpful. Started writing things that God was showing me. And often it's just a verse, and meditating, you often find you just want one verse to really think about. Let me read the very first verse that I got from the book of Deuteronomy. But before I do that, I'm going to tell you something I think is significant, because when I found my notebook the other day, a page had fallen out. I want to read what it says, and this is going back to May. Let me get it right. Jackie will remember this. This was a day of prayer for Great Britain with David Hathaway. And I wrote a few notes on that day. 2nd of May. Okay. Colin Urquhart was speaking at this point. He said, God had said to him, crisis? What crisis? I'm not in crisis. Heaven's not in crisis. And then he said, God will make a way. He can use this nation to find a way out. And they were talking about the virus then. Get rid of the virus, this nation. Then a speaker called Ken Gott had spoken, and he'd said, this is not a post-Christian country. It's just that the Christians have been asleep. There you go. And then he mentioned that so many of our scientists and pioneer medical people were Christians, and God had given them knowledge and understanding about the discovery of all sorts of medical ideas that without which we could not function, the NHS would not function. So let me give you a quick rundown of what some of those are, just to encourage you, because I really think this is important. There was a guy called Alexander Fleming. He was a Christian. He was the first one to use penicillin. God showed him how to use it. That's 1928. A Scottish Christian called James Simpson used chloroform. He tried it on himself first, by the way. They didn't do 10 years of testing. He's tried it on himself and fellow doctors. Edward Jenner found out about vaccines. God showed him how to use cowpox vaccine to get rid of smallpox. Wow, and I don't think they took 10 years either. There was a guy called Joseph Lister, who found out about antiseptics. He was a Christian. And then there was a wonderful lady called Florence Nightingale, who introduced a good nursing practice. And she was most definitely born again and called by God. And so that's just to encourage you, because we have a vaccine in this country, and I just believe God's got his hand upon those guys in Oxford. They may not be born again, but God is using them. Right. Okay, that's a little bit off the point. So I started to write my journal again. And I started to feel that I was benefiting from it, you know, meditating on the word of God, going over verses that you may have learned before and you knew, finding new verses that you see. I've never seen that one before. And the very first one in the first chapter of Deuteronomy I read, oh, this, I love this. This is Moses talking to the people of Israel and looking back over their 40 years struggle in the wilderness because they disobeyed God. They did not believe the two spies who had the good news that the land ahead of them was there for the taking. And they upset God. They hurt, you know, they brought trouble on the whole nation. And God said to them, I think through Moses, moreover, your little ones and your children, who you say will be victims, who today have no knowledge of good and evil, they shall possess it. And that's why they had to go round and round in the desert for 40 years, because the generation who did not believe had to die or be killed, or at least there were none of them left, and except the two who were the good spies. And Janie, are you there? You know that song we used to sing? 12 spies went to spy out Canaan. 10 were bad, 2 were good. So at the point where Deuteronomy starts, that's where Moses is reflecting. And it's a really good book to read if you want to get it clear in your head what happened to those guys in their 40 years journey in the wilderness. And then the verse I wrote from Deuteronomy 2, verse 7. Now, what I'd like to say is I only started reading the other day, looking back through my notes, because I had done something really stupid, and I spilled a whole cup of coffee over my journal. All right, okay, doesn't look too bad now, but on the morning when I did this, I held it up like this and it was dripping wet with coffee. And I thought, I think I better chuck this away. I was very cross with myself again. Second journal that I'd lost or messed up. And I chucked it in the corner. Must have been under the radiator. So when Tony wanted to put the Christmas tree up, I had to have a bit of a clear out. And I found the journal that I hadn't thrown away. And it dried. So that was good. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll keep it. And maybe I'll have a look at it. And as I was going through it, I began to realise that the verses I had written down from the book of Deuteronomy, actually God was speaking to me through them. So the second chapter of Deuteronomy, this is a beautiful, wonderful promise from God. And it says, to those who were the new generation, except for Joshua and Caleb, the new generation. They had trudged through the wilderness for 40 years, don't forget. It says, for the Lord your God has blessed you and all the works of your hands. He knows you're trudging through the wilderness these 40 years. The Lord your God has been with you and you have lacked nothing. Okay, they may not have thought that, although most of them wouldn't have known any different. That was their life from the time they were born, trudging like nomads through this desert place. Deuteronomy 11, verse 2. For the land you go to possess is not like the land of Egypt from which you've come, which they would not have remembered, where you sowed your seed and watered it by foot as a vegetable garden. But the land you cross over to possess is a land of hills and valleys, which drinks water from the rain of heaven, Isn't that lovely? A land for which the Lord your God cares. The eyes of the Lord your God are always on it from the beginning of the year to the very end of the year. What a lovely verse for the start of 2021. See, God did say to his people, if they didn't obey him, he would withhold rain. But in this new land, that it talks about this lovely expression, the land that drinks the water from heaven. Land flowing with milk and honey. So what God was saying through Moses is things are about to change. God had spent 40 years preparing those people. Okay, 40 years is interesting because it does represent a whole generation, but it also represents a significant period of time. The 40 years used a lot in the Bible to express time when God was doing something and preparing something, or people doing work in them. And he was preparing the people that should cross over. The ones that shouldn't cross over were left behind or died in the wilderness. So this was a new generation, apart from Joshua and Caleb. Moses was going to be out the scene. He knew that. He knew he'd done his work. His time was done. But he was encouraging and helping the people to understand what was lying ahead. And it was going to happen soon. You know, this was the time. They'd trudged around. They'd gone around in circles long enough. Things were going to change. And the people needed to know this because they, up till now, they'd been in maintenance mode. That's difficult to say. Bit like we feel like we've been this year, you know, everything is just sort of ticking along and we've kept our heads above water. They've been like that for 40 years. So now they have to change their attitude. They have to change their mindset because they were no longer going to be in a position where they had manna provided for them every morning, and where their clothes didn't wear out and their shoes didn't go rotten. This is a new era, a new season. And thank you, Oggy, for what you were saying last week about seasons. We mustn't waste the season we're in, but we're also looking forward to a new season. So I'd just like to share some thoughts, which I just believe the Lord gave me, about the people who were left, who were going to go through the River Jordan into the promised land. Okay, God was preparing them. They would have to be able to do new things. They would be eating new things. They would have to start thinking and planning in a new way. They would have to start sowing and reaping and thinking of the future. They haven't had to do that for a long time. And they would have a new leader. But God had appointed a new leader for them. Joshua, and this is what Deuteronomy has to say about Joshua. The thing about leaders, you don't always know that you are until God's telling you you are. I think that, in fact, if you think you are a leader, just go steady, because it's not a job that we would recommend. Now, Joshua, the son of Nun, who was from the tribe of Ephraim, so he was one of Joseph's sons, great grandson, was full of wisdom. In fact, it says he had the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. So the children of Israel took heed of what he had to say, and they did as the Lord had commanded Moses. So a smooth transition was achieved from the leadership of Moses down to Joshua. Was easy because people recognized that Joshua was the chosen leader. He had spent a lot of time with Moses. If you read through the account of the children of Israel going through the wilderness, there are many, many occasions where it mentions that Joshua was with Moses or he was waiting for Moses to come down. He was always there waiting for his leader and learning from him. He spent a lot of time with the man of God. We also could learn that Joshua was a man of military potential, a bit of a warrior and a strategist, and that was very necessary because they were going to have a lot of battles. They weren't just going to walk straight into this promised land. Joshua was the right man. I think he knew he was, but he was still had moments when he doubted it, a bit self-doubt. But God spoke very clearly on that matter. And then there's Caleb. I love Caleb. I remember my dad preaching about Caleb when I was a little girl. Because Caleb, the Bible describes him as a man who had a different spirit, meaning that he was not like the crowd. He was very able and capable and willing to stand out for what was right, even if it brought him problems, which we know it did. My servant Caleb has followed me fully. I will bring him into the land and his descendants, they shall possess it. So Caleb also had leadership qualities. He was a man of great faith, as we see from the time when he brought the good report of the land of Canaan. It was him and Joshua that brought the grapes and spoke of the giants in the land as well. But what I like about him is he didn't complain about not getting the top job. God had not chosen Caleb to lead the children of Israel into the new land, but Caleb was a leader. But he was willing to work underneath Joshua and with Joshua. He was also a very capable fighter. He had to fight for his bit of land. And he had to stand up, stick up for himself. He had to show his determination. Later in the book of Joshua, he actually goes to Joshua and asks for the land that he knows God has promised him. So, he's a guy very focused, and I should think he would have done the job quite well if he'd got the top job, but he wasn't the top man, and he was quite happy to be what God had given him to do. And then there's a little story which I love because it's about a woman, and there are very few women mentioned in this story. Caleb had a daughter called Aksa. How many people have heard of Caleb's daughter whose name was Aksa? Oh, Tony has, he's got his hand up. God had promised that the land that Caleb would possess would be enjoyed by his children. So when Aksa got married, she was given a dowry of some land. And then she shows determination. She shows her father's same spirit. She gets off her donkey and she goes to her father and says, "Look, father, thank you for the land you've given to me. I really appreciate that, but it's very dry land. Please, can you give me some water?" So but in that, it's described as springs of water. There was at two ends of the land. So she would have plenty of irrigation and would be blessed where God had put her and her husband and her descendants. That's lovely. So us women are not left out, and we can apply a lot of these leadership qualities to women anyway. One more group that I find this really interesting. The tribe of Reuben and Gad and half tribe of Manasseh had already been given their land on the east of the Jordan. They could have settled down there before all the fighting started. They'd already had to claim their territory, and life could have been easy for them. They could have just stayed put, but they didn't do that. They crossed over with all the multitude into the land of Canaan to help them fight. And I, as I thought about this, it's a beautiful picture. These 2.5 tribes stuck with it until the job was done, until Joshua said, "Okay, you can go home now and settle down with your wives and children." They were faithful people who were glad and pleased to go the extra mile because they had vision. They could see the promises of God being fulfilled. Do you know, we have people like that in our church, and some of them you probably don't even know about. We have people who used to be part of the church who still give faithfully, as far as I know. Yeah, I'm getting a half a nod for that. We don't see them because they've moved away or they're no longer part of our congregation, but they still tithe into our church. Isn't that wonderful? We have people who've moved away and yet are still supporting us, helping us, encouraging us. And Jackie, I believe you and Wada, such people, we just thank God for you. What is it, 2 years now? You could have said, that's it, folks, we've moved to Wimborne, nice to know you. But they haven't done that. They have stayed and encouraged us and blessed us. And God will give you that time, Jackie and Rod, when you know he says, okay, it's time for you to go and settle in the land that God's given you. And that time will come. But for the for this time, thank you so much, because there are battles ahead. And at the moment, we do need your help and we do need your spiritual advice and wisdom. So, okay, there was a younger generation that God allowed all of them to go in, as far as we know, because they had not been involved in the mistakes made by their parents. But I really felt God was speaking to me about our church through some of this wonderful story. But he has prepared us. He is preparing us still. So if there is yet a period of time when it doesn't look like anything's happening, don't worry. God is working in lives. He's working in hearts. He's preparing those people for the positions that he's got for them, leadership positions, and then other positions which are not so obvious. And when the time comes, and I don't think it's going to be long now, because I really have this sense from this scripture, this story, that the time when God spoke to Moses, he says, okay, it's time. It's, you've been going around in circles long enough. You've been marking time too long. It's time to move forward, to stretch out your tents, lengthen your cords, strengthen your stakes, for you will expand to the right and to the left, and your descendants will inherit the nations. So I hope that's helpful to you. I do encourage people to write notes in journals, even if you pour coffee over them or lose them in a hotel room. I did get my notebook back. That came back from New Zealand.